Football Friday with Bickley and Murata, powered by Ram Trucks. Built to serve. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. NFL headlines on the Bickley and Murata show are not meant to cause actual harm, other than, say, maybe an ego bruise. Headlines are not recommended for anyone under 18 years of age or anyone who may be pregnant or nursing. Headlines are non-alcoholic, free-range, cage-free, organic, gluten-free, kosher, and hypoallergenic on approved credit. If you experience any itching or burning, stop listening and consult with your physician. All rights reserved with Open Table. Bickley and Murata, NFL. Headlines. Take it away, Shecky. Ha!
Well, it's our way to preview week three of the NFL through the use of creatively written headlines that could tell us what will happen on Sunday around the National Football League. Bick's headlines, courtesy of
Rockin' Rodney Lakin.
Rob Larkin, as I like to call him.
Rob Larkin.
Hey, Rob Larkin.
That was good.
Mine are provided by Jared Carlin. So get it started for us, Bick.
Okay, Vinny, number one, unbearable. Cards to make switch to Josh Rosen after another sluggish offensive performance. Unbearable, playing off the Chicago Bears, obviously, but I think that if it is indeed unbearable, that switch will be made in-game and not after the game.
I mean, that's the way I feel, too, that if the struggles continue, the crowd will be uneasy about it. They'll be vocal about it. I wonder if the Cardinals would make that move because, you know, Steve Keim made it known today that they would rather have Josh Rosen make a debut and a start as opposed to in a relief effort. Very curious to see what the Cardinals' offense looks like early in that game Sunday against a pretty good Bears defense. My first headline, to live and die in L.A. Subheadline, Rams thrive, Chargers falter as thousands of fans in attendance are stunned to find out L.A. has a second football team.
Wow. Jared, I understand your need to be funny, but subheads can never be that long, my man. They got to be a little shorter.
Oh, wait till you hear some of these other ones.
Oh, boy.
Then.
Oh, boy.
That might have been a Super Bowl pick for a lot of people going into the season.
Good point.
All L.A. Super Bowl. The Chargers have not looked that impressive so far. The Rams have. I think that does happen. The Rams certainly will thrive. And, yeah, I do believe there's a lot of people in L.A. that don't know the Chargers are there.
Wow. My next headline, Grood Awakening. Raiders pass rush non-existent as John Gruden starts the season 0-3. I think they're going to start playing some Mark Morrison, Return of the Mac, in Oakland.
No, because he's not coming back.
That's a good point.
We've all gone and given our feelings about that trade. It doesn't make sense to a lot of people. What's even more confusing is the fact that John Gruden, still with a straight face and cameras pointing at it, will say things like, it's hard to find a good pass rusher. Just shut up. Just shut up about it. Pretend he didn't exist. That's right. A better tack to take than
right.
The one you've taken.
That's a very good point.
Next headline for me, Carson forced out, this time not by Leno. Wentz returns only to get re-injured as Colts upset Eagles. I don't really think that's going to happen. But I will say this. We've talked about the overreaction factor in the NFL. And part of that overreaction, yeah, there's a lot of early season stuff. But everybody wants to anoint very quickly. And we saw it with, we're seeing it right now with Baker Mayfield. He came in, did a really good job, and the Browns actually won a football game.
Yeah.
We saw it in week one with Sam Darnold. People said, oh, this guy is, he's the next Aaron Rodgers. He hasn't played well the next 2 weeks. Longer stints. Marcus Mariota, do you remember his first game as an NFL quarterback, Bick?
Vaguely.
He put up four touchdown passes.
He was amazing.
I think he had a perfect quarterback rating in his first ever start.
I remember that.
And now, all this time later, the jury is still very much out on whether or not Marcus Mariota is a good quarterback.
A great debut.
Carson Wentz was great last year. He was really good as a rookie. I want to see how he reacts to being... He just got cleared for full contact. You know it didn't happen, by the way, in any practice. Because anybody that hit Carson Wentz in practice would have been let go.
Yeah.
So the bullets are real again on Sunday. I'm very curious to see what that looks like and if there's a step back. And I even left Deshaun Watson off the list. Deshaun Watson doesn't right now look like the same quarterback as he was pre-injury. You agree?
I would definitely agree with that.
Okay. Sorry, that's a long
I would definitely agree with that. But the good news is he's coming back at a time when Nick Foles has sort of unplugged his whole Super Bowl aura by himself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
So he's got that going for him, which is nice. My next headline, Mahomes run. Patrick Mahomes continues to light up the scoreboard in Chiefs win over San Francisco.
I fully expect that to happen.
So do you remember the old line of thinking that spread quarterbacks in the Big 12 could not work? Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes. Maybe they're proving that differently.
Again.
A little early.
A little early to anoint.
No.
But Mahomes looks like the real deal, I will say that.
I do want the. This is a very, very funny anecdote from Sam Farmer. Bruce Arians said Patrick Mahomes is one of the four smartest players he's ever seen on the board, up there with Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. Who's the fourth guy? Sam Farmer asked him. Bruce Arians, I don't want to say. That way, every other guy I've ever coached will think that I'm talking about him. How smart is that? You leave yourself one opening, and everybody can just assume it was him.
Classic BA right there.
And that really good BA. Now, but if he felt that way about Patrick Mahomes, why did the Cardinals let the Chiefs move up and get him?
You're going to open up that can of worms now?
I think this is the one guy that Bruce Arians wanted that they didn't get.
And that's why he left. No, I'm just
joking. Right.
My next headline is, ugh, couldn't they both have lost? Seahawks beat Cowboys as Cardinals fans root for entire stadium to get swallowed by black hole.
Oh, boy.
That's a little harsh, Jarrett. Nah, it's actually not.
No. Yeah.
I don't know who to pick in that game, quite honestly. The Seahawks, Cowboys. The Seahawks don't look very good. The Cowboys got a win. I pointed out Sam Bradford's passing statistics last week. That's never happened before. 17 completions for 90 yards.
Yeah.
I had a listener tweet me earlier in the week and said, if you took away the one pass that Dak Prescott threw, the long touchdown pass to open the scoring for the Cowboys, he would have had very similar numbers to Sam Bradford in that game.
I see.
That's how that's how conservative the Cowboys offense has been.
My final headline, La La Land, question mark, more like La La Bland. Rams grind out close win over Chargers in Battle of L.A. So it's kind of like another game you had. Rod sees a boring game, a defensive game.
I gotcha. I don't think that's going to happen. My last headline is, here we go. This is vintage Carlin. I got to concentrate to deliver
deep
this.
Deep breath here. There you go.
It's the Pitts. Bell sits, Brown quits, but Pitts blitz, gets to fits with hits as D commits, grits, and outwits Tampa. Jarrett, you've wasted your whole career.
You really have. Jarrett, that is just outstanding.
Many people have told me that.
It's the Pitts. Bell sits, Brown quits, but the Pitts blitz, gets to fits with hits as D commits, grits, and outwits Tampa. Wow, the Tampa thing at the end just kind of...
And I think so far in week three, so four headlines a week that Jarrett has delivered for me. Total of 12. I think I've disagreed with 10 of the headlines.
Yeah, I've disagreed with a lot of these as well.
I think Tampa Bay beats...
But it's really just sort of like the creative process. It's not, you know what I mean?
And since we're in the rhyming thing, no more headlines, but Bix picks week three.
Yeah, I gotta find my... here they are.
We got the lock of the week. And the upset of the week. What do you got, Dan?
Be careful what you call a lock.
Well, yeah, and be careful about what you call an upset, too.
And this is just straight up.
Right.
We're not talking about point spreads.
Right. I've got, and I don't know if this is an upset, but I've got the Chiefs beating the 49ers. I went through all my picks, and I don't see anything that just jumps out at me as a huge, huge upset. But if I'm going
I would say that that is the definition of not an upset.
Right. Okay, well, then you tell me if I've got anyone here that looks like an upset to you. My lock of the week, I'm going to have the Patriots beating the Lions.
Okay.
Just given the Matt Patricia, Bill Belichick, the Patriots coming off a very, very poor performance. Yeah, you know how New England normally reacts in times like that. So that's the lock of the week to me. But I don't really have a huge upset special.
Let me look up a schedule again real quick.
I'm serious. I mean, look, Vikings over the Bills, no upset.
No,
Texans over the Giants,
huge point spread.
No upset. Packers over the Redskins, no upset. Chief over the 49ers, no upset. Dolphins, Raiders, no. Eagles, Jaguars, Panthers, Ravens, Falcons, Rams, Bears,
Why
Cowboys.
Don't you just say, I know you probably didn't make it in your selection, but the Cardinals are 5-point dogs at home.
Okay, I'm picking the Cardinals to win. That's my upset.
Whoa, there
no,
you go.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I really, that's my problem. I don't really have an upset one that jumps out at me off the screen here. And I don't even know a game that would be conceivable to flip and have it be called. Maybe the Giants beating the Texans, but I don't think that's going to happen.
So you are picking the Cardinals to win, though?
I'm not picking
Man,
the Cardinals to win.
The Texans are 6-point favorites. Wow, it's home field. But
yeah.
All right, that's NFL headlines this week. Some news coming in from Cardinals camp in terms of injuries, who will not be available this week for the Cardinals against the Bears. Second straight week, they'll be without right tackle Andre Smith.
He did. He practiced yesterday, and after practice, he didn't quite feel the same. You know, going through it, he didn't really have the strength that he anticipated that he was going to have. So, again, we just want to make sure that, you know, we put the best guys out there that's going to be able to help us.
Yeah, and that's going to be John Wetzel at right tackle for the second straight game. I've said this about John Wetzel. He is a capable backup.
Yeah.
Swing tackle, can play in the interior of the line, too.
He's like a big, comfortable couch that you put downstairs,
yeah,
not upstairs.
But, you know, are you that comfortable going in with John Wetzel against Khalil Mack, who's going to line up against him a lot? They're going to have to give him a lot of help with chipping running backs, tight ends on that side. They're going to have to be creative to slow him down.
Somebody send me some stats on Mason Cole and his grades, his blocking grades so far, and they weren't very good. And it surprised me to see those numbers, because I think, in terms of what I've seen, I've liked what I've seen out of him. And maybe it's because you're not looking for good grades, you're just looking for him not to mess up too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The subject that you kind of are monitoring going into this game,
yep,
a lot of it has to do with crowd mood and behavior. Here's Steve Wilks talking about that very subject, being booed.
Well, I mean, it's just very simple. You know, we always talk about if you don't learn from history, you're bound to repeat it. And I wanted those guys to understand, number one, we're playing for each other. We're playing for ourselves. But we are playing for our fans. And it's important that we put a quality product out on the field, something that they can be proud of, and most important, that we feel like represents us. And we didn't do that the first 2 weeks. So I thought it was important that they heard that. So we don't hear it again.
That was the subject of closing practice the other day with piping in crowd noise. That was booze. I'm so intrigued by that, especially early in the season. I don't know if it's a great move. I don't know if it's a desperation move. I really don't. I've never heard of. I can't think of another team that's done that, especially this early in the season.
Yeah.
So I don't know, have anything to base it on. I guess I got to base it on what this team looks like on Sunday.
Okay.
Before I make up
yeah,
my mind.
And I'm kind of the same way. I kind of feel the exact same way. I think what's going to happen is it's going to be a little snapshot into the Arizona sports market, from the makeup of the crowd, the Bears fans, to how quick they are to turn on Sam Bradford. Every fan base is different. You could tell last night that fan base in Cleveland, after having two near victories, and Tyrod Taylor really wasn't the fault in either of them in the first two losses.
No.
But they wanted Baker Mayfield in a very bad way as soon as Tyrod Taylor started missing throws. And that's all it took, was missing throws. And that created just a vortex of energy that just flowed right through that whole stadium in support of Baker Mayfield. And he took the moment, he ran with it. And it was a powerful thing to see. It was a powerful example to set. And I think Cardinal fans are looking at that going, okay, we want that. That's what we want. We want to go experience what those Cleveland fans did. It's not going to be that easy. As I said in the blast, the biggest issue here might not be if Josh Rosen is as good as Baker Mayfield. It's whether the Cardinals are even close to being as good as the Browns are.
And we have three games to base what we think of the Cleveland Browns so far. But through the two games, they're night and day.
Yeah.
Cleveland's played with energy. They've played with passion. They've made some plays around the field. We haven't seen that from the Cardinals yet.
A couple more cuts. Sorry.
Yeah.
Just Steve Wilks talking about Sam Bradford and the inquiries on when Josh Rosen might play.
Sam is doing some good things. I'm not going to sit here and talk about, you know, whether or not he performs bad. I want him to perform well, and I want everybody around him to perform well. So in saying that, we're going to make sure that we just continue to stay positive and do everything that we can to get our first win this week.
And one more.
Right now, I'm really hoping that Sam can be effective in the things that we're trying to ask him to do, and where Josh can continue to learn and grow. You know, sometimes you throw those rookies in there, they go through those rough spots, but eventually they do get better. But I would love for him to be able to sit back and learn and grow, and for Sam to be able to continue to, perform and get this offense going.
Yeah, there's a lot of hope in what Steve Wilks says. I hope he can perform. I hope he can, do what we ask him to do for this offense. Whether or not there's concrete, tangible answers, we'll find out a little bit more on Sunday. I think we're going to see improvement from the Cardinals, Bick, honestly, but I think most of that improvement is going to come on the defensive side of the ball, like I said.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and that's the way it's going to have to be for them to have a chance at this game.
Yep. Pack a bag and join the 2030 Club of Phoenix for the 10th annual Phoenix Suitcase Party on Friday, October 26th. The night will be filled with food and drinks from the Valley's top restaurants, live music, auctions, and a chance to win a trip on a private plane to and from Vegas or L.A. Head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for details and your chance to win tickets. All right, off day yesterday. D-backs back at it, hosting the Colorado Rockies three-game series at Chase Field. Here to talk about the D-backs with us from Fox Sports Arizona, Todd Walsh, our guest on the Coulter.
The great Todd Walsh.
On the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Todd, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. We were talking earlier today about probably a month ago when Diamondbacks fans looked at the schedule. This was the start of where it was highlighted and circled and starred and underlined, and unfortunately it doesn't feel like any of these games have that much meaning.
I understand. I remember doing that myself. I remember thinking about these shows. But before we go down this tributary, can I actually cut a deal with you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, before I'm off the air here, I do want to talk about something you guys said on Monday about a particular Cardinals game back in the day that, Vinny, you said you attended. So just I want to make sure, okay, I can get to that before we're done. You went to the Broncos-Cardinals game in 1989, correct?
Yes.
37-0 loss?
Yes. Okay. It was a Saturday afternoon game.
Yes, okay. Just hold that thought for later. Can you just save me a minute or two on that?
Okay, you got it, definitely.
Okay.
All right, I want to get into right now for a guy that always knows the nuances and the stuff that's happening in between the lines.
Yes.
Why did Torey Lovello bench five players? What message was he trying to send, and who was he sending it to?
That's a really good question, and I want to ask him that face-to-face at some point before my coverage of the Diamondbacks is done. I really thought the statement, though, started, and I believe there was a statement the night before when 5-1 turned into 9-1 and he emptied the bench. I think the analogy that we made on the pregame show the next day with Mark Grace was it looked like John Wooden in a Pac-8 game against Oregon with 5 minutes to go pulling everybody and bringing Swin Nader into the game. And that's kind of how it felt. I looked out and I'm like, oh my God, we were running through the changes, and it was just like the camera was just panning left to right across the field, and I thought, holy smokes, what in the world did he just do here? And then we saw that lineup. I don't know. And I know a lot of people are saying, I wish he had done that earlier, and I'm not trying to defend Torey. I was thinking about this earlier today, knowing that you're probably going to go there. And I was at those games in San Francisco where the offense was completely non-existent, almost irrelevant in the first two games of that series, which was, I thought, the beginning, what we felt like was going to be a massive push and run to the postseason. If he had done that then and they failed on the road at AT&T Park in San Francisco, there would have been a lynching. They would have gone nuts against Torey Lovello, and I understandably so. So I don't know what he was doing and who he was doing it to. I don't know if it was specific, but when you pull the starters like that, that is an unbelievable statement. And I was sitting there with Mark that day, and we were looking at it from five different angles. What was Joe Maddon thinking? What was Cole Hamels thinking? And maybe even a bigger picture, what was Craig Counsell thinking when he was sitting in his manager's office with the Brewers before that game? Seriously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's all kinds of tentacles to this, but I can't speculate to who he was directing it to, but I do want to ask him that face-to-face before all is said and done. I do believe that he was at a point of exasperation and saying, well, look, nobody else was doing it, and I don't think he was ever going to call out one guy. So maybe this was a, you know, just kind of a carpet bomb.
Yeah. Todd Walsh, Fox Sports Arizona, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. I was one of those people that reacted to it thinking, okay, that's the white flag being waved. But I'm actually glad he did it for a couple of reasons, because I do think a message needed to be sent to somebody, Todd. And I was happy for Torrey Lovello, because that's the first decision that he made in a long time that worked out well for him. He's had a bad run of pushing the buttons and having it blow up in his face, so I was glad for him.
I was, too. That first inning was one of the most joyful feelings I've had covering this team in the last, I think, since you described the last month or so, watching that happen. And that, I mean, we've talked about these kind of things over the years together in a variety of ways and formats, but that's the beauty of sports to me, is watching that first inning happen against Cole Hamilton, against a Triple-A pitcher for the Chicago Cubs. Yes, they're at the end of their rope. They're at the end of 30 and 30, and they saw the light at the end of the tunnel. Yes, they had just given themselves a cushion with the Brewers and the Central, all those things that you can weigh on that side of the equation. But to see those guys execute and do it so quickly. I said the night before that the game was over in the first inning when the Cubs rolled them, and it doesn't happen that often in baseball, as you guys know. But I felt like the next night the game was over in the first inning again. And it was, you could just feel the pressure release in the dugout. And I just wish I wasn't up in the broadcast area. I wish I was where I am on the road, down in the camera well, because I would have been paying very careful attention to the guys that weren't starting. How were they reacting? What were they doing in the dugout? How were they reacting when those guys were coming in after scoring run after run after run? How are they publicly showing their support? I wish I could have seen that from 10 or 15 feet away, because that's the one thing that I would have been very curious to see.
Now, one of the things that I've been talking about a lot, it was a great moment on the postgame show with you and Gracie when Paul Goldschmidt on that Saturday night, crushing defeat, came out and just spoke with, in such a manner of being tone deaf, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, and either could Gracie, and I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Did that weird reaction, minimalizing a heartbreaking loss, calling it entertaining and fun, was that Paul trying, in a misguided way, trying to say, we're not frustrated, it's not that, and failing badly, or did he just succeed in making people go, this guy's got to have some more fire? And the reason I say that is, Torrey Lovello made it clear he wanted more energy from that lineup he rolled out there, and if you look from that late-game heroic Paul Goldschmidt had, homering down to his last strike, he's had one RBI since. We've seen this before last September. Mm-hmm. How much of this is central to Goldie, in your opinion, Todd?
I've been thinking a lot about it since the moment we came on camera after that bite ran. I think I looked right at Mark, and Mark looked right at me, and then we looked back at the camera, if that's how my memory serves me.
Yep.
The bigger story, though, for me is this. I've been covering Paul since he came up. I think I was at his debut in San Francisco, and after he had a big game, and I realized at that moment that it was going to be a challenge talking to Paul Goldschmidt on camera, because Paul Goldschmidt doesn't want to talk about Paul Goldschmidt. He doesn't want to talk about his exploits. So when I thought of that moment in hindsight driving home, I realized that when Paul hits two home runs and knocks in five, he's one of the toughest interviews in all of baseball. It's a challenge for me and for Jody Jackson and for Kate Longworth to go on the field and talk to Paul in situations like that, because he just doesn't want to go there. He doesn't take it to the next level. He doesn't bleed for you on camera. He just won't give it to you. But what I saw that night was almost, it was so extreme that it told me how much it hurt, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah.
But he's just not going to give that to you. You know, Archie Bradley ripped my head off in Los Angeles after the second Matt Kent explosion, and that's Archie Bradley, and that's what we've come to know and love, and why people look to him for moments like that. Paul Goldschmidt is just not going to be that guy. You want him to be that. I mean, in this world, in 2018, that's what you want, right? But his consistency as a human in that regard, I think, is a lot, leads to what he does on the field. And I was thinking about Shane Doan. I've interviewed Shane Doan probably more than anyone combined in North America. And I will tell you that Shane Doan is a difficult interview. after tough games. He was. But the difference between Shane Doan and Paul Goldschmidt is Shane Doan would show you on his face and say things through gritted teeth and pursed lips. He would never really give you the words, but the visual sufficed. You yeah. just knew he was steaming, that something horrible happened, and it was bad, and they had to find a way to recover. Paul yeah. doesn't even give you that.
True.
That doesn't mean that he's not dying inside about a loss or a couple of losses. It's just that's who that guy is, and I can't emphasize it enough. I've had to crawl on top of that field after a game, after a great game, and it's an extra challenge to try and get a little extra from Paul, and the key is not to talk about himself. And I think that, to me, is sort of what makes up Paul Goldschmidt. And, you know, in 2018, that can be a struggle sometimes. And believe me, nobody wanted to see more of Paul that night in the room than me. I had to deal with it coming on camera. But I have to look at the whole picture, and that's who he is. And that's just what it is, and that's who he is.
Todd Walsh, our guest. Todd, before we let you go, we're right up against a break, too, so we got to go back. We cut a deal. Take us back to Broncos, Cardinals, 1989.
Okay, you remember that was a Saturday game. It was cold and cloudy, 37-0. The over-under was 38.5, by the way. There were six players that threw passes in that game. Elway, Kubiak, Bobby Humphrey had a halfback option pass for a touchdown. He was on my fantasy team, so I was very torn. Gary Hogeman replaced Tim Rosenbaum, who got his first career start, fumbled on the opening drive. Carol Mecklenburg scored the winning touchdown in the first sequence of the game, and I had to pick the Miller Lite player of the game every game for USA Today, and I had to pick once again, as I did many times that year, Rich Camarillo, because he had eight punts for a 41.5-yard average. I will never forget that game. I'll never forget that game because it felt like the Broncos' ninth home game of the year. And when you said yes. it the other day, I went into the 1,000-yard stare. So thank you for taking me down memory yes. lane with that. Unbelievable.
Full admission. I was so upset that day. I was chewing gum at one point, and I got so upset at the Broncos fans, I threw my gum at a random Broncos fan. And I'd never admitted that before.
Now it's out. And that was the Hank Coolman era. And look
yes.
what we've done now. We've come full circle.
Yes. Todd, great stuff. Thanks for the time. We really appreciate it.
We'll see you guys tonight. Paul Calvisi's on the show. I can't wait. We'll see him at 6 o'clock. All right. Take care, guys.
All right. Todd Walsh, Fox Sports Arizona, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's CoulterTempe.com, Coulter on Camelback.com, and CoulterNissan.com. It's Friday. It's time for Jarrett to shine. Sports
yes.
Kebab next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
It's sports news skewered. The Sports Kebab.
Jarrett, there's a lot of people that are hurting in Phoenix because of the sports teams. Mm. It's up to you to make them feel better.
All right. Well, the Sports Kebab, brought to you by Paradise Ridge Dentistry. We don't just inject Novocaine, we inject fun. Text TOOTH to 620-620 to find out more about Paradise Ridge Dentistry. And I really hate to start the Sports Kebab on a somber note after that introduction, but...
Okay.
I got to really, I'm going to be honest with you guys, right? Because if we don't have honesty, then what do we have? I feel like I can trust you guys, I trust the audience, and I got to tell you guys, there comes a time when a man looks himself in the mirror, and you know what? He doesn't like what he sees, okay? There's a phrase that people use, it's called hitting rock bottom, and sometimes this takes the form of doing something morally, maybe ethically reprehensible to feed a smothering, life-consuming addiction. Sometimes it takes the form of personal strife, of losing your family, your friends, of being left alone to wallow in your own misery with nothing left to do, nowhere left to run, no one left to turn to. Well, this morning, as I looked myself in the mirror, brow sweaty, lip trembling, a tear in my eye, I hit my rock bottom.
Oh, no.
I was officially jealous of Cleveland Browns fans. Okay, I'm glad I got that off my chest. Yes, the Browns won a game this season before the Cardinals did. Now, the week started with the Browns releasing their kicker, Zane Gonzalez. So even before the game, I was jealous of the Browns for completing my lifelong dream of getting to fire an ASU graduate. Now, should I feel happy for the Browns and their fans? Let's face it. No. Let's face it. Their fans were embarrassed by the team for years, okay? I mean, locally, the Browns were about as popular as Chevy Chase at an Emmys after party.
Ooh.
I mean, their most famous and most beloved Cleveland fan is Drew Carey, right? Drew Carey, yes. A man who was born and raised in the city. Until he got some money, and now he lives in L.A., owns a soccer team in Seattle, and spends all his free time in Las Vegas. The fans are happy now. I mean, imagine not winning for nearly 2 years. Not winning for nearly 2 years. And they couldn't even blame it on weirdo listeners voting for Aaron Maloney. But they finally did it when their number one pick came in and led them to victory. Now, I'm not saying things have been bad for Cleveland, but if you look at the record books the last few years, Baker Mayfield is now somehow the winningest quarterback in Browns' recent history. And wow, do they love Baker Mayfield in Cleveland right now. In fact, they were going to build a statue of Mayfield right next to the statue of Bernie Kosar, until they realized that wasn't a statue, it was actually Bernie. Not too swift of foot there. But I don't blame Browns fans, because this was a big moment. Experience emotion and joy because you did something for the first time. I mean, it's a life-changing moment, only comparable to your first child, your first kiss, your first bowl of cereal with milk.
That's funny.
Yeah, how about Kendall Jenner saying she just tried cereal with milk in it for the first time in her life? Did you see this?
Did.
Yeah. I'm starting to think Devin Booker didn't injure his hand from playing basketball. It was from hanging around the Jenners and constantly slapping himself in the forehead in disbelief. But if you think Browns fans are happy, imagine being on the other side. Imagine how miserable it must be being a Jets fan, being the first team to lose to the Browns in years. I mean, they took it hard. They were drunk. They were rowdy. They were disoriented. And that was just Joe Namath.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, the Jets looked terrible. And remember that
terrible were they?
They looked terrible. And remember, they killed the Lions week one. So how bad are they?
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to be a long season for Detroit head coach and evil puppet master trying to kidnap Pinocchio, Matt Patricia. Have you seen this Matt Patricia character?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He looks like Pavarotti's cab driver.
Oh, that's good.
He looks like a bootleg Street Fighter II villain. He looks like he should be riding a mini motorcycle down the street with his twin. Remember those guys? But at least the Lions have put up some points. Oh, man, how about those Cardinals? I mean, I'm not saying they haven't done a lot of good things this season, but if you counted them on your fingers, even the drummer from Def Leppard would have a pinky and thumb left over.
Oh, boy.
I mean, the defense is struggling. The offense is struggling. Sam Bradford and his receivers have more awkward chemistry together than Bert and Ernie. I mean, there are nephews in this state who weren't even born the last time the Cardinals won a game. Shout out to Bennett.
Oh, yeah. Oh boy.
We got to get our Bennett update.
The entire Cardinals offense total has only one more touchdown this season than Le'Veon Bell, who has not played, by the way. Sorry, I'm stressed, okay? I'm a little stressed out. Luckily, I had a chance to pray this week, though, because Wednesday was the holiest of holidays, Yom Kippur. And I want to commend Paul Goldschmidt, David Peralta, AJ Pollock, and Eduardo Escobar for sitting out the game that day. Frankly, I didn't even know they were Jewish. That was a great token, I think. No, they were actually benched in favor of some minor league call-ups, and it worked great as the Diamondbacks won. But back to Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, okay? Because I looked inside myself, and I started with, you know, a little look inside my soul. I'm going to end with one. Because I want to atone for some of the sins of the past year, okay? I've made fun of a lot of people, okay? Adam Silver, Jerry Jones, Andy Reid, Curt Schilling. And I should not make fun of people who, by all accounts, are decent, upstanding people worthy of respect. So I apologize to Adam Silver, Jerry Jones, and Andy Reid.
It's outstanding.
That's it for this week.
Nice job, Jarrett.
You did nothing to make anybody feel better, but it was funny.
No, that's true. That's a good point.
The Sports Kebab with Jarrett Carlin every Friday here on Bickley and Murata. You can get that humor all the time on Twitter. Follow Jarrett at JarrettGC, JarrettGC. The Phoenix New Times hosting the 19th annual Best of Phoenix Affair on Saturday, October 13th. And we've got a spot on our guest list for you. You'll enjoy food and beverages from over 40 of the Valley's best restaurants, all inside the Van Buren in downtown Phoenix. Just visit the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win. Coming up, a stern warning for a certain Phoenix Suns rookie coming from an NBA star. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Do you remember?
One of those songs that everybody likes. One of those rare songs that
Andy Greenberg probably hates it.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
You put this on a plate with some melon, and he ain't touching it.
Right. And we're playing this because, well, it is the 21st day of September.
And we remembered.
And we remembered.
Yeah, I do love this song.
It's
one of those songs that makes you... No, I like Earth and Wind. I'm not crazy about fire.
Not a fan of fire?
Never been a fan.
Yeah, no, Earth, Wind, and Fire is just, they're monstrously talented. I love that group. Love that group.
Look. What would Rodney Dangerfield sound like?
Maurice White.
What would Rodney Dangerfield sound like doing a Jim Rome show?
Oh, epic, I tell ya. Great jungle guy. No, really.
Dueling Rodneys.
We've stumbled upon a new talent for Bick to make anybody sound like Rodney Dangerfield.
That's right. Exactly.
All right, that's today's song of the day.
Oh, hey, not for nothing.
Media Day was going on for the Philadelphia 76ers today. Joel Embiid did an interview, Bick, with ESPN's The Jump, and he had a message for DeAndre Ayton of the Phoenix Suns. His message, quote, he's about to get his ass kicked this
year. Oh, no. Oh, no, he didn't.
Oh, yes, he did.
Holy smokes.
Now, he did go on to say, quote, he's going to be good. He told that to Rachel Nichols and Steven Jackson. But when you talk about he looks like Joel Embiid, I play on both sides of the court. I think I'm a good offensive player, good defensive player. I do it on both ends of the floor. I watched him play, and he's got a lot of work to do. But he's got a lot of potential. He's going to be really good. So he kind of softened it after the initial Embiid bomb.
Yeah,
which is kind of the way he operates. I'm kind of sad that they're only going to play each other twice this year.
There's only one thing. I like DeAndre Ayton a lot, but there's one thing that I kept hearing from people, Dave Griffin, one of them, versus what he always said. And DeAndre Ayton always talked about himself being the hardest worker all the time, never letting up, and then David Griffin and others have said, well, I don't think he plays as hard as he thinks he plays. Mm-hmm. I want to see his motor, Vinny.
Yeah, we get to see it soon. Media Day coming up next week. Suns are going to training camp. There's an open practice next week at Talking Stick Resort Arena that I'm really looking forward
to.
First glimpse of the 2018-19 Phoenix Suns. Basketball's almost here. Football is here.
Yes,
week
it is.
Three for the Arizona Cardinals. We've been breaking down this team all week, and not in a good way. But what do you see happening Sunday against Chicago, Pick?
Chicago Bears are going to win the game 21-9.
So you're saying it's going to get a little bit better, but not much better.
That's what I'm saying.
That's kind of the way I feel, too.
So you're saying Phil Dawson's going to actually get some field goal attempts.
Or a touchdown in the safety. Just whatever. It's going to be something like that, 21-9.
Yeah, it'll be a touchdown, a missed 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
And a safety. 21-8.
21-8. That's good. Which would be perfect because that was the Diamondbacks record before they flamed out.
Oh, this was an amazing stat, and I just stumbled upon it today. The A's beat the Angels yesterday.
Yeah.
21-3, okay? That's a baseball score. It's also a very common football score. For 46 years, the A's and Raiders have played at the Oakland Coliseum. That was the first time the Coliseum has ever seen a final score of 21-3 in baseball or football. Isn't that weird?
Where do you come up with this? That's
somebody
crazy
tweeted that
weird
out today. I thought it was amazing.
That's crazy weird.
Yeah, I like the Bears to win 13-7, low-scoring defensive game. I'm hoping I'm wrong, and I'm hoping we'll see some breakout offensively for the Cardinals. Washington ASU, your prediction. My prediction is I'm going to pack the wrong stuff, and I'm going to be soaking wet, cold, and miserable.
I'm going to go out on that optimistic ledge and predict ASU is going to win this game.
Wow.
Yep, 31-28.
I got Washington 28-21.
Okay, so at least we both got it a close game.
My upset of the weekend, I feel good about Oregon State knocking off U of A.
Do you really?
I really do.
Oh, that would be rich if we have to deal with Jarrett after that.
And part of me is hopeful because I have two Oregon State Beavers in my terrible Pac-12 fantasy.
Do you really?
Game. Yes.
Huh. Huh. You want to hear something else?
What?
Oh, I tell you, take my wife. She has to buy one-of-a-kind furniture. She spent $1,500 on a table. I tell her I'm one-of-a-kind, aren't I enough? Ho! Oh.
Oh, my goodness.
That's outstanding. You heard,
Rodney,
you heard Gambo tell that story?
Rodney Gambofield.
You heard Gambo tell that story?
I did.
You had to go in and give him grief just because you heard him tell that story.
You got to take the credit cards away, man.
Dude, fast.
Thanks to everybody out here at the AT&T store. Thanks to all of our listeners for coming by. By the way, 4145 South Gilbert, corner of Gilbert and Ocotillo. They're grand opening, so if you're in the market for a new iPhone XS, come see these great people here at the AT&T store. That's going to do it for us. Have a great weekend. This was the week that was.
There's no reason for the Cardinals not to offer Dez Bryant a contract for 1 year. I know he's been considered possibly a cancer, but a cancer can't hurt you if you're already dead.
Never had a waking nap.
I have one several times a week from 10 to 2.
I don't know what led this offense to be so somnambulant.
I mean, I would like to talk about something good, but there's nothing good to talk about.
U of A got their first win of the year.
I'd like to talk about something good, but there's nothing good to talk about.
Do you even like me anymore?
More than you know.
It's in last year's fashions.
Right.
At today's prices. Well,
the Day
of Atonement.
Of Atonement, where all your year's sins are wiped away with one day of atonement.
You think one day is going to cover that for you?
No.
I'm like a powder keg ready to explode. I'm about to go Zane Gonzalez and kick this damn computer wide right by about 8 yards.
If anything smells like throwing in the towel, doesn't this? Well, I mean, the towel probably doesn't smell if you're throwing it. Well, maybe it does.
That's why you're throwing it.
That's why you're throwing it.
There's one thing I know, Bick. It's ugly.
And these people are looking at me like, who is that heretic over there? Talking about dick, I like that.
H-A-I-R.
Yeah, exactly. Heretic.
I drink a lager.
Very good.
I drink a lager drink.
You drink a lager drink? You drink a lot of drink is what you drink. You drink a lot of lager. I came out Sunday night to put the trash out, and I look over, and he's bent over, winding up his hose. I'm like, that's my view of the neighborhood?
Wait, what? Sorry, what? Say that again?
What?
They always say that Nicholas, he's a mahout.
Stop it.
They've seen Jake Lamb turn to mutt. Normally you have a big, giant roast beef sandwich in your belly.
I know. Usually you're neck deep in beef jerky.
Right.
I'm sorry, that was your neck.
I'm afraid, all right? For the first time in my life, I'm afraid.
I tell you, you ever give kids chocolate cake for breakfast? Oh, tough crowd. Hey, Dad is great. Give him chocolate cake.
It all happened when he got bit by a radioactive chicken wing.
What a bunch of snowflakes. Come on, donkey.
Good night, everybody.